Hi, this is Sophia Shai on ArtistFirst.com. Join me on a special interview as a music artist July 25th, 8 p.m. live to air. Hear my newest single, Won't Stop Your Love, available everywhere right now. Connect with me on all your favorite social networks. This is Sophia Shai, coming live to air only on ArtistFirst.com.
And welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You were tuning into The Corey King Show. This is my show. It airs every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/coreyking.htm. And don't forget to follow me and Artist First on Twitter. You can find me under the Twitter handle at Corey King, CoreyKingGG, and follow Artist First on Twitter under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And if you have any questions for the guest today, we'll get into who the guest is in just a minute. But if you do have any questions for the guest today, just go ahead and tweet them to at Corey King, CoreyKingGG, and we'll get those read for you on the air. Before we jump into the interview, we're going to go ahead and do the weekly segment I do here, just called Bands of the Week. This week we only have three, including our guest tonight and two others. The first band is actually a rapper who classifies his music as not just hip-hop, but he calls it hippie-hop. He's a really positive dude, and he just kind of pushes for that positivity, and all his lyrics are pretty positive, and it's pretty cool. But you can check him out. His name is Mod Sun. I actually interviewed him at Warped Tour this year. I covered Warped Tour last year and this year, and I got to hang out with the bands and do some interviews, and he's one of the guys I interviewed. So you can check him out at modsunmusic.com. And also, if you want to see the interview I did with him, I'll have it posted on my show, but on my website at artistfirst.com/coreyking.htm. But I'll also have... I have it right now. It's posted on YouTube. If you just search Corey King and Mod Sun, it'll be one of the first things that pops up. So just go ahead and check that out. He's a cool dude. The next band is actually a band from Alliance, Ohio, which is where the station is based out of and where I'm from as well. So this band is called Hovian Sound Escape. And they one of the members of the band is a guitar player. Richie Kindler owns Jupiter Studios, which is a really cool venue in Alliance, Ohio. If you guys are ever in the area, you should stop by and check it out. They got a lot of organic food, some pizzas and pizzones and all that. And they have bands playing there pretty much every day. So check it out if you're ever in town. And you can check their band out at HoviansoundEscape.com, and that's J-O-V-I-A-N SoundEscape.com. And last but not least, we have our guest, who is an Artist First, I should say veteran. He's been on a couple times. He's not new to the station, and we love having him on. He has good tunes, and actually, what you're listening to right now is one of his songs called Jimmy's Bolero, and the artist is Gary Ault. And you can check him out at GaryAult.com, and we're going to find out more about him right now. Hey, Gary, you with us, man?
Yes, I am. How you doing?
I'm doing real well. How are you this evening?
Great, thanks.
Good to hear. So are we talking to you out of your home base in New Jersey today?
Yeah, well, Hackettstown. But it's about an hour from home, but I'm actually at a radio station using one of the studios for this phone call. I'm pretty close to home.
Right on. All right, so how close are you to Newark, New Jersey?
Oh, it's about an hour from home, something like that.
Well, I'm going to tell you, one time I was heading to, I was going to see a concert in New York City, and the GPS kind of freaked out, and, I live in Ohio, so it's about an 8-hour drive from here to New York City, and our GPS freaked out, and took us into Newark, and it was probably one of the scariest cities I've ever been into. Have you ever drove through Newark, New Jersey?
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's problematic for sure. There are actually sections of it that are not that horrible, but you have to know where you are. You don't want to get lost there.
Yeah, and I could tell. I was especially nervous because people could tell that we weren't from the area because we had Ohio license plates, and we were just, like, driving in circles because our GPS was freaking out. And every time I have somebody on the show that's from New Jersey, I always ask them about Newark and give them my little spiel, but it's just a place that sticks in my head because it freaked us out so much. But let's go ahead and jump into the interview, into the questions. For people who don't know much about you or are just hearing about you for the first time ever, would you mind giving us just a brief little history about yourself and how you got involved with music and how and why you decided to pursue it?
Well, I've loved music ever since I can remember. It's the first thing I really fell in love with when I was the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan when I was five, you know, one of those cliche stories. And I used to make, guitars out of cardboard that didn't really play, but, you know, you try to put rubber bands across them. I did anything I could just to imitate what I saw on TV and heard on records. So, when I was in my early teens, I actually picked up a real guitar and kind of taught myself how to play it. Eventually took up piano. Actually, I started with drums in my high school band. And I've always been involved with it. But I think as an adult, I mean, you can tell by the fact that I said I was five when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan that I'm in my 50s. At some point when I was, an adult, I decided that maybe I'd try my hand at songwriting because I sort of gave up on the idea of being a touring musician. You know, I did plenty of gigs here and there, but it just wasn't consistent with the family life that I felt was the most important thing. So I just sort of, played in the background. Once in a while I'd play a gig, play with some friends and this and that, but I didn't really do it that seriously. And then one day I thought, you know what, I can write a song if I'm in the shower, if I'm in the car, I could be walking down the street, I could be sleeping in bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. And it doesn't matter where I am. So I started getting serious about writing songs and, submitting them for various artists. And then I decided, since most of them don't get recorded by anybody, that's any songwriter's experience, I thought I should just record these myself, So I decided to start releasing records around 2001, I guess. And I've released, about 10, something like that. So that's, that's what I do. I enjoy it. I love writing songs. I love playing. I do play in a band, but... the main thing I do is write songs and record them and distribute them.
Right on. Well, let's go ahead and jump into a song so people actually know what kind of music we're talking about. The first track we're going to play is track 7 off of the sampler I have here, which is called Kimberly Foresta Resale. What do you want to tell us about this song before we go ahead and play it?
Let's see. Well, the main idea behind this song, the lyrics are very, very sparse, very, very simple lyrics because... I was just thinking of a female name, and, Kimberly had a certain ring to it, and, the accent is on the first syllable and it ends with a vowel, and, I was just thinking of writing something that had a triplet kind of a feel, like, in other words, a three-quarter kind of a feel, but it's actually in 4/4 time, just because of the way the syllables fall, and I just wanted to keep the lyrics, super, super simple, just to kind of, focus on that whole concept of the triplet within the 4/4 kind of framework. So it's just a little rock and popper that was a lot of fun to record and, I think fun to hear.
All right. To anybody just tuning in, you're on the Artist First World Radio Network. I'm your host, Corey King, and this is the Corey King Radio Show. And my guest is Gary Ault. He's from New Jersey, and we're playing albums from a sampler. And this next song you're about to hear is called Kimberly Foresta Resale, and it's off of the album From Art of Survival. So if you want to find more out about Gary, you can go to GaryAlt.com, GaryAlt.com. But like I said, we're going to go ahead and jump into a song here. This is called Kimberly, and you're hearing it on the Artist First World Radio Network. Enjoy.
Kimberly, can I see Kimberly now?
That song you just heard was Kimberly Foresta Reale, which I may be pronouncing wrong still, but before the break, I called it Foresta Resale. I added an S to the name. That's not at all what it's called. It actually has meaning behind the name, and I botched it. So I'm going to leave it to Gary to explain what the name actually is and what it means. Sorry about that, yeah, Gary.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I'm sorry I called it that. No, I wanted to call it Kimberly, but I just thought I'm not really comfortable with the idea of naming another song after a girl's name, because that just seemed like a kind of a 60s bubblegum thing to do, you know. So I said, well, let me just see, I don't know, what does Kimberly mean? And it actually means Royal Forest. And so I said, well, that sounds like a silly title as well. So I started playing with other languages. I, you know, tried Spanish and whatever, and I finally settled, and I believe it's Italian for Royal Forest, Foresta Reale. So that's what I originally called it when I released it as a single. And then I decided that's just too complicated to say and think about. So why don't I just call it Kimberly, and we'll just subtitle it Foresta Reale, because it's already out as a single, did pretty well. And so on the album, it's called Kimberly, Foresta Reale.
Well, that's cool.
Story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's cool that it actually had some interesting and meaning behind it. You know, I would have never known that Kimberly actually had, like, a definition attached to it. So
Yep. That's
pretty cool.
You
mentioned that when you were younger, you used to make your own guitars and stuff, just doing makeshift stuff. Have you ever seen – well, let me ask you first. Are you a fan of Jack White?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's in a – have you ever seen the documentary with him? I think it's Robert Plant and
Jimmy Page.
Oh, Jimmy Page, yeah, and Mike It Loud.
Yeah, I did see that. One of the few people that saw it, because I think they released it for about a week in a couple of theaters, and that was it. But yeah, that was it. And it started out with that scene where he's making a guitar, basically.
Yeah, that's what I was leading to. I was going to ask if you saw that. That was actually pretty cool. He just plays like a one-string slide creation. And I think it actually has a real name, but I don't remember what it's called. I just thought it was pretty cool, though.
I don't know, but it had a cool sound. I was like, how did this happen? You know, there must be some kind of trick going on here, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's what, and that's what I love about Jack. I'm a pretty big Jack White fan, because he, I mean, none of his stuff is, he's not like a super complex guitar player, but I think he has so much creativity and such a different, angle of view on things that he actually makes, you know, the simplest stuff sound really cool. I love that when people, you know, it really implements simplicity into the music, and it really, you know, comes through as something new and obviously creative. And I think he's one of those people. I just think that's really cool.
Yeah, and I think there's an art to that in itself. It's a special talent. What I tend to do is I end up complicating things at some point or another. I just get this idea about a rhythm or a chord change or some, you know, weird throwing in a sixth and a 13th or something like that, and it just ends up, I end up saying, well, why can't I write a song like John Fogerty or Neil Young or Jack White? That's just a basic song, can't be simpler, but for some reason it's got a great hook, and I think that's an art in itself, and I have yet to discover that.
Well, while we're touching on songwriting, do you have any, when you're writing your songs, do you have any, like, techniques or formulas that you usually follow, or, you know, how does a song come out of your head? Where does it start from, and how does it finish?
It could just start with anything. I mean, I learned years ago that, you know, when I was trying like crazy to write a song, and I was like forcing it, you know, and I was trying all these ideas, you know, taking a Mozart score and turning it upside down and playing it backwards and just all kinds of things to come up with something different. And I finally realized that you're never going to get anywhere like that, you know, forcing it out of yourself. So I just let it happen. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. If it does, it does. And the spark for a song is usually something really, really simple, just a drum beat, perhaps. Excuse me. Or just a guitar chord. Once in a while, you just play an open B, and it sounds magical, although it's the same chord you played yesterday. And it just, I don't know, an idea comes to mind. Or sometimes it's just a lyric, just four or five words that end up being the title, perhaps, and you think, okay, what's this about? It's usually a very, very simple idea that ends up just getting flushed out at some point.
Who are some of your main influences as far as, well, musical influences and also specifically lyrical influences?
Well, musical influences, there's a million of them. I mean, when I was a kid, I was a big Beatles fan, and I loved Motown, anything Motown, you know. But, you know, I also listened to Mozart and Chopin and Tchaikovsky. I think when it comes to songwriting, probably the Beatles would be the initial, you know, the ones that I first listened and said, yeah, I wish I had written that song. I wonder how that goes, you know. But by the time I was around 10 or so, I became a huge Eric Clapton fan. I still am. He's my favorite artist of all time. So, you know, especially his early years with Blues Breakers, Cream, and Derek and the Dominoes, I still just listen to that stuff in awe, absolute awe. Now, I don't know if that's translated into anything in terms of my songwriting. When it comes to songwriting, I think musically, I'm probably more influenced by like Burt Bacharach and Stevie Wonder than anybody else, because I really analyzed their songs. I really took them apart and said, what in the world is he doing, you know? So, I mean, it comes out a million different ways. I write blues songs, I write rock, I write pop, you know, folk, whatever, you know, jazz. But those are the ones that I really analyzed the music and really tried to kind of emulate it.
That's cool. Now, you mentioned that you have a kind of like your genres are many instead of, you know, just one or a few things. So one of the hardest things, well, I'm a musician too, and when people ask me, you know, what kind of music does your band play, you never want to like lump yourself into one kind of category or anything, but you know, they really want to know and you kind of got to give it to them. So what do you tell people when they ask you, you know, when you're like, hey, come out to my show, and they're like, okay, well, what kind of music are you playing, or you know, what's your genre? What do you usually tell them?
I usually say the wrong thing. because I don't know what to say. Because I'm all over the map. Everything I ever loved is it flows through my veins, and that's what motivates me and makes me make music. And I think people do kind of want to know. Like you say, they want to know. Like, am I going to spend $20 to see, you know, something I don't want to hear, or hear something I don't want to hear, rather? So I'll just tell them, well, you know, I play some folk, I play some rock. I mean, if they want to see me play live, the band I play with is generally, most of it is pretty hard stuff, like Foo Fighters and Coheed and Cambria and, you know, some pretty loud music, you know, so that's fairly easy to define. But when it comes to my CDs, I just tell them, I don't know, there's some folk on there, there's some pop, there's some rock, and, you know, so on my last CD, I tried to kind of focus and kind of make it more rooted in a particular genre. So it's almost like a Led Zeppelin record where you'll hear some hard rock and then you'll hear a bit of a break, you know, a bit of a mellow tune. But it's still, you know, you can still hear that it was Led Zeppelin or whatever, of course, in this case, me. So, it's kind of a hard question to answer the right way, because I never know what people really want to hear.
Well, that's cool. Let's go ahead and jump into another song. The next song we have lined up here is track number 10 off of Beef Wellington and the Mad Cows. Where did that name of the album come from, first of all?
Well, this is an interesting story. That album is actually a collaboration with a good friend of mine, Jason Arvanitis. And we were in a band together, not anymore, but we were in a band together. And we were always bandying about with band names. And I just thought of this name, Beef Wellington and the Mad Cows. And, you know, it was sort of a joke. Nobody really, you know, they thought it was funny, but it's not going to fit on a marquee, you know, et cetera. Then when we decided to do this project together, it was Jason's idea, actually. We agreed, first of all, that every song had to be quirky in some way, either outright comedic or at least just some little quirky thing somewhere. If it was a normal song, it was not going to be on the record, you know. And so he actually dug into my archive and came up with the name Beef Wellington and the Mad Cows. So the name of the album is Masticated Bovine. Beef Wellington and the Mad Cows is sort of like a Sgt. Pepper name. It's like a fake band name kind of thing, you know. But in our case, that was like the name of the group, and the name of the album is Masticated Bovine, just something that he came up with. And Better Left Unsaid is basically a song that I had. One of the first songs we collaborated on, not the first, but I had basically come up with about a minute worth of a song, kind of in a Joe Jackson kind of vein, I thought. And it just wasn't going anywhere. I had no idea. I just left it sitting for years. And I just played it for Jason one day, and he came up with this introduction idea, with this outro idea, with a little bit of a bridge toward the end. And it just sort of, it just came together. And that's the story.
Right on. Let's do it. This track is called Better Left Unsaid by Gary Ault, and you're hearing it on the Corey King Radio Show on the Artist First World Radio Network. Enjoy.
Thank you.
anybody just tuning in, you're on the Artist First World Radio Network, and you are listening to the Corey King Radio Show. My guest is Gary Ault, and that song you just were listening to was called Better Left Unsaid, and it was from Beef Wellington and the Mad Cows. And if you want to find out more about Gary, you can go to GaryAult.com, find out about his bio, where to get his music, where he's playing, and just a bunch of other cool stuff. He has a pretty unique website, so go ahead and check it out, GaryAult.com. And if you're listening and you're curious about something pertaining to Gary, you can tweet your questions to @CoreyKing, CoreyKingGG, and I will do my best to get those read. Hey, Gary, you still with us, man?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, cool. So, oh, got some feedback there. Would you consider yourself a gearhead as far as like your equipment? Do you have a lot of like pedals and stuff that you use when you're playing live or when you're recording or anything? Or are you pretty straightforward? You just plug into your amp with minimal pedals and effects and stuff and just kind of create sounds more naturally?
No, I use a lot of pedals, but I wouldn't call myself a gearhead because I don't like the technology into things. When I get in conversations with fellow musicians, and they start talking to me about the Marzio pickups and all those great, you know, equalizers and stuff. I don't know what the heck they're talking about. I don't even want to know about it. You kind of have to know to some extent in order to do the stuff, but I want to make the music, and you know? I don't want to think about all the technical end of things. But I use pedals for, distortion, sustain sometimes. Oh, not sustain, but like a digital delay, depending upon the song. I use a wah-wah pedal once in a while if I want to get funky. A chorus pedal, an octave pedal, so I got a bunch of things. When I'm recording, it's everything nowadays is digital. I mean, unless you have an old studio, I basically record clean, mm-hmm. and then I've got so many effects that I can apply with software that, you know, it's pretty intuitive, really.
So, do you have like at least a go-to guitar that you use every time?
It depends what I'm going to do. I think most of the often I use my Stratocaster just because it's easier. Like if we're rehearsing, I just use the Strat for most of, you know, just about everything. Just cause, I don't know, it's just easier. It's just there. But if I'm going to record or if I'm going to play live, then I pick the guitar based on what I'm trying to do. So if I want a Strat kind of a sound, I'll certainly use a Strat. If I want more of a beefy sound, I'll go to my PRS. My son has a Les Paul, which actually is not in the house anymore because he moved out. But, I use that a lot if I want a beefy kind of a Les Paul sound.
Okay. And we actually, let's go ahead and jump into another song right now. Let's go to, track 8 off of the sampler, which is Crystal Orchid. What do you want to tell us about this song before we go ahead and play it?
I kind of started writing a poem originally, which I don't do, and I don't think poetry and song lyrics are necessarily very well related to each other. But in this case, I wrote, you know, I don't even know where I know where I got the idea. I was in this Swarovski store, and they had an actual crystal orchid, and which was bought as a gift for someone. And it just, the sentiments behind it kind of came out in the lyrics, and I just put it aside. I mean, I'm talking about, oh man, like 15 years ago or something that I originally started writing the lyrics, and then I finished them. And I guess I came up with a musical idea, I'm not sure. But when I kind of pulled it out of my hat, when I was doing the album that it's on, I thought, well, maybe we'll do a string quartet. That'd be cool, kind of a Yesterday kind of a thing, or a She's Leaving Home kind of thing. So I did that. I just scored it. I was actually surprised myself because the first time I wrote all the four parts was just, it never changed, you know, and it's the first time I'd ever done anything like that I wrote string quartets back in high school for music theory class, but this was the first time I did it for a song and recorded it. And then the trick was getting the musicians, because I almost never have anybody guesting on my albums. I almost do all the instruments unless it's something I can't play, like an Irish pipe or something like that. So, you know, then I had to get violinists, violists, and cellists, and it was a bit of a trick, you know, but I tried a bunch of people, and we finally came up with something that worked.
All right, cool. Well, this song is called Crystal Orchid, and it is from the album Not For Sale to Miners by Gary Ault, and you're hearing it on the Corey King Radio Show on the Artist First World Radio Network. Enjoy.
Beautiful the asking, crystal orchid calls the light. Plays it out in colors captured inside. a thousand bright horizons. She lays before my eyes. Carry me in her arms to a world beyond shadow and cloud. Crystal orchids choir the only sound. How can I repay my lady, oh my angel of sight? Crystal orchid pray, crystal orchid play me in your life. When she smiles, the woman inside is a window to her world. Tears she cries reveal the little girl. The girl inside the crystal flower needing tender care. Could I be the arms to hold her and keep her secure? Could I be the heart she's waiting for? Open up your soul and show me, oh, my angel of sight. Crystal orchid pray, crystal orchid play me in your light. Play me in your light and keep me high. Believing I'll always look in your eyes and see love silence the night. Crystal orchid pray, crystal orchid play me.
Song you just heard was Crystal Orchid by Gary Ault, and you heard it on the Corey King Radio Show on the Artist First World Radio Network. To find out more about Gary, you can go to www.garyault.com, www.garyault.com, and you can find out where he's playing, who he is. You can listen to his stuff, and I think he's actually an advocate of a couple special causes, which we'll actually ask him about when we come back on the air. But if you're just tuning in and you would like to find out something about Gary that I haven't mentioned yet, you can go ahead and tweet your questions to at Corey King, CoreyKingGG. Hey, Gary, you still with me, man?
Yes, sir.
All right, cool. Like I said, I just mentioned that you donate some of your proceeds to specific causes and organizations. Would you mind touching on that?
Yeah, I a while ago, maybe a year or two ago, I became involved with the Jorge Posada Foundation. You know, I was working with them trying to find ways for them to raise more money and ways of investing their money, because my primary business at the time was investments and insurance. And, you know, ways of attracting more sophisticated donors and more money, therefore. And what the Jorge Posada Foundation does is they specialize in caring for families of children with craniosynostosis. And what that is a congenital deformity of the skull. Jorge Posada Jr. had that. He's had a number of operations, and that's the only way they can. There's no cure for it. There's not even an understanding of why it happens. But if they don't, they literally crack the kids' skulls open and reform them, and it's a very tragic thing to see. So your heart goes out to them, and again, they usually have to have multiple operations through life. So the Jorge Posada Foundation doesn't just help people get money for the operation and the procedures, but also how to cope with it, how to deal with all the issues that are obviously new to them. So I worked with them, and then the cancer, it's just sort of a similar kind of a cause, where it's helping kids with cancer. It's one of the most tragic things you can think of. And of course, there's, you know, any number of causes that are just as valid and important. But I just felt that my heart goes out to kids, I guess. So about, I think, 50% of net proceeds? In other words, after I've recouped my costs, 50% go between those two organizations.
That's really cool, and that's it especially shows that you care about it, because music, I think for everybody, you know, even the bigger names, it's a tough business, and it's tough to make, you know, a good buck in, and that just shows that you really care about the organizations donating half of your proceeds to those causes, and I congratulate you for that, because I think that's pretty cool.
And I don't make much anyway, you know, and I just decided that, because, you know, I have to have a day job, because making music is what I do just because I love it. If I was going to do it for money, I'd be crazy, because I just don't make that much.
Right.
So I just decided that whatever I do make, I mean, I don't really need it, you know. I mean, I could use it, of course, but I think that the kids and families need it more, so that's what I decided to do.
Well, that's cool, man. Hey, if we talked, we touched a little bit on you and your recording process, and you mentioned that you actually play the majority, if not all, of the instruments on your recordings. Is that true? Am I right?
Yeah. Now, on the Beef Wellington one, because it was a joint project with Jason, we split it. You know, he played half, and I played half, depending upon what we were doing, you know. But and his wife sang on one of the songs, I think. But apart from that, I do everything, drums, bass, guitar, keyboards, everything, except for, like, there's one song I had my son drum on, and one song I had a friend named Charlie drum on. I very often brought in guest vocalists. In fact, the last couple of songs were Jason singing,
because
I just don't think my voice is really suitable for a lot of things. And just, I don't know, like I told you, I had the string quartet come in. I've had an Irish pipe player come in, probably one or two other things, I just can't remember. So by far the majority of the instruments are done by me.
And I remember you saying that you actually scored out the music. Do you know music theory, is what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, I didn't go to Juilliard, but yeah, I started out studying it myself, just like looking at sheet music and things, saying, why do they call it a G13? I understand why it's a G.
Right.
Where does 13 come from? And then you take it apart and realize that, oh, it's because it's got a seventh and a sixth in it. Seven and six is 13. You know, so you start realizing what's going on. If you really want to learn theory, it's best to learn it from a teacher, which I did in high school. And, you know, we scored string quartets, and I wrote a piano sonata as a project, and, you know.
Do you think that music theory has actually has it helped you, or has it, as far as, like, creativity and writing songs, or has it hindered you? The reason I would think that it could hinder some people is because, you know, when you're writing and you're just kind of doing it without music theory knowledge, you could just be like, okay, what sounds good here? Let me just mess around and kind of get creative with it. Not saying you can't get creative with music theory, but I think it's more of a formulated type thing where you could just be like, oh, well, technically this goes with this, so I can do this. You know what I'm saying? So has it helped you, or has it kind of, you know, just kind of led you to more of a formulated route of writing music?
I think it's helped me, depending upon what I'm doing, and it could be a hindrance, I guess. But the reason I say that is because my influences are all over the map. I mean, if I'm writing, like, I've written some classical music, I've written some jazz music. Well, certainly theory helps in that case, because, I mean, it's so much more complex than anything else, you know.
Right.
But if I'm writing some, like, a simple blues song or a simple folk song, it's just not appropriate to worry about, you know, all the structure and all that kind of stuff. You just have to kind of go with what sounds right and what feels right. And that's what made the Beatles so great, because they had no idea about music theory, but they're doing all this pandiatonic stuff. And, you know, it's so they just didn't even know what you call it. They just did it because they heard it. So I try to... most of what I write is not classical or jazz. It's usually rock or blues or folk or pop or something like that. And in that case, I don't have to turn it off or on. It just happens, you know, that I'm writing a folk kind of a song. I don't try to get complicated, you know.
Okay, well,
it's kind of like the John Lennon school of songwriting that says that the sound that you're making is the most important thing. You know, it doesn't even matter what the words mean half the time. So,
right.
But I'll give you an example of, even in classical music, of, you know, two composers that are very different. Tchaikovsky... You know, the criticism of him was that technically he was not a great writer, but his music is beautiful. I mean, it's just unbelievably beautiful almost every time, you know. Whereas Brahms was technically very, very astute, but he was not considered a tunesmith. You know, he's kind of had, you had to kind of put your thinking cap on to understand what he was doing. So, you know, those guys were both pretty successful. So I don't think it really matters as long as you're faithful to what you're doing.
Well, let's go ahead and jump into another song here. We got track 13 off the sampler, which is, now correct me if I'm wrong in pronouncing this. I've struck out a couple times on the pronunciations here. Is it Lune Brisée?
Lune Brisée. That's French. And what it basically means is cracked moon.
Uh-huh.
And I'll explain that to you. I have a recurring dream ever since I was a little kid. It's just a bizarre dream where I was walking outside and all of a sudden the moon just broke up into pieces and everything became dark and just like completely hopeless and empty and just like, you know, that was the end of everything. You know, it was just a very, really depressing dream I had, and I wake up and think, what the heck just happened? You know? So when I wrote this song, it's got a very, bluesy kind of plaintive tone to it. And I just said, let's just call it the Cracked Moon. And I thought, no, that kind of reminds me of the Norge Repairman, you know, that old Saturday Night Live skit with the butt crack, you know. So I said, I don't want people associating my song with the Norge Repairman, you know. So again, I went and started thinking, okay, foreign language. And Lune Brisée is basically French for cracked moon.
And is the moon is broken tonight? Is it also a derivative from your dream?
No, that's totally different. I got that from a Facebook post that a friend of mine in Maryland made one day. She just said, the moon is broken tonight. And I don't know what she meant.
Uh-huh.
What? I don't know if she just meant that she was looking for it and didn't find it or something like that. But I said, Sharon, that is a really cool song title. Do you mind if I use it? And she said, yeah, sure. I'm not going to do anything with it because she's not a songwriter anyway. So I just kind of said, well, what would that be about? Well, the moon is a romantic figure. I had written songs in the past about how the moon can kind of unite people that are in love or something like that.
Right.
Well, if the moon is broken, I guess that means that it's not working for you. You know, your love is not happening or something like that. So maybe we'll play that later. But that's all that's about.
Right on. All right. Well, this is, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Lune Brisée?
Right.
All right. By Gary Ault. And you're hearing on the Corey King Radio Show on the Artists First World Radio Network. Enjoy.
Thank you.
That song you just heard was Loon Brisé by Gary Ault, and you heard it on the Artist First World Radio Network on the Corey King Radio Show. Like I've mentioned before, if you'd like to find out more about Gary or what he's up to, you can just check him out at GaryAult.com, GaryAlt.com. Hey, Gary, you still with me?
Well, you know, I have to check. Yeah, I guess so.
All right, cool. So we touched a little bit on your band before, and you mentioned that you played some harder stuff and you played some covers. Is your band, when you play out, do you guys play mostly covers, or do you throw a lot more of your stuff in there than I'm assuming so?
Yeah, probably about 80% covers, maybe even more than that. And the reason for that is, I mean, there's a lot of covers I like to do, first of all, but the main reason is because I'm kind of the only guy in the band that writes. I mean, Larry, the bass player, has written songs on his own as well as with me, but I'm the only one that's kind of like trying to, you know, write songs that I think the band might want to play. Everybody else just, you know, it's a democratic procedure. They just all have an idea of the, you know, let's do this Foo Fighters song or you know, whatever, and we discuss it and decide which ones we're going to play. And, you know, so I only have about, what is it, about 20 or 25% of the input, I guess, And anybody has veto power, so if I suggest one of my songs and nobody really wants to do it, we don't do it. I don't try to push it down their throats, you know?
So
I guess we probably play about half a dozen or maybe something like that.
Well, do you, like, play solo, or do you have a separate band that plays just your music or, like, the majority of your music out?
No. Once in a while I'll do an open mic or, you know, do a little gig by myself just on my acoustic guitar, in which case, of course, I have to select material that fits that genre. And I'll throw in, like, a Jimi Hendrix song or you know, something like that, but I do almost exclusively my stuff. I've got probably an hour or two worth of acoustic stuff, so it works out pretty well.
All right, well, we are getting close to the top of the hour, which means we got to wrap things up, but we're actually going to play, we're going to end the show with two of your songs. Did you want to do The Moon Is Broken Tonight, and then either track four, which is
Scared.
Yeah, did you want to do end with those two? Is that cool?
Yeah, that'd be great, sure.
Okay, perfect. But before we do that, I'd like to give you an opportunity to tell everybody where they can get your music and where they can find out more about you or follow you on, like, the Twitters and Facebooks and all that. So whatever you want to plug, you can just go ahead and do that now.
The main place is cdbaby.com. I mean, they're a great, great resource for independent musicians. But once you put something up on CD Baby, it automatically goes to Amazon and Rhapsody and, I don't know, iTunes and I don't know, whatever, you know, all kinds. It's just any place you could find music. You could find my MP3s or even my CDs. And, you know, I am on Facebook. I have a Twitter account, but I really don't use it. I don't even know what the heck it's called. Gary Ault, I guess. So you could try that, but I probably won't even be paying attention. So, so you can find me on Facebook. I don't promote myself through Facebook because it's such a bizarre, the way they develop it. I mean, I can go on a tirade about it, but they're always changing things, and they kind of screwed up a lot of the stuff that I did, so I don't even really bother with it. So you basically got to go to my website and cdbaby.com or iTunes, whatever your favorite place is to buy music.
Right on. Well, thank you, Gary, very much for coming on to the show. And you can really tell that you're a person who's appreciative about music as an art form, and you know, you express it very well through your art form. So thank you for taking the time out of your day to hang out with me and Artists First, and hopefully we'll see you back again.
Okay, thank you for having me. It was a real joy.
No problem. So what we're going to do is we're going to close up the show with two of Gary's songs. The first song we're going to do is The Moon Is Broken Tonight, and then we're going to do Scared. And if you guys missed where to find out more about Gary, you can just go to GaryAult.com and find out all you need on his webpage. So thanks again, Gary, for hanging out with us, and we'll see you guys next week at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday on the Corey King Radio Show. Enjoy.
Raise my eyes, see your smile going round in my head. Your light binds her heart to mine. Words don't need to be said. But you go on the wind too soon. Where are you? Where are you?
faded flame to blue. Where are you? The moon is broken tonight. The moon is broken tonight. Facing fears, a heart of steel. Can't understand the silence from you. And I'm scared. The silence, help me understand. Search the void for the answer. Find a coin minted of wood. These tales of abandonment are all written in stone. I'm scared, scared, I'm scared that what I feel is real. I scared.